So I am going to open a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means and open a work session for the purpose of introducing legislation. Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like the committee to consider LC 318 or 3818 for bill introduction, please, regarding trying to take care of some Department of Human Services Oregon Health Plan coverage changes for 0507.
Thank you. Senator Schrader has moved that the committee introduce as a committee bill LC 3818. Is there discussion? For the benefit of the audience, what we're doing is simply authorizing the drafting of a new bill, as Senator Schrader said, for the purpose of dealing with a very specific issue in the Department of Human Services budget. Seeing no discussion, are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. And I will close the work session. And we are now here for the reason you have come to visit with us. We are now opening public testimony on the state's 2007-2009 budget. Before you is the legislature's Joint Committee on Ways and Means, members of the House and the Senate together. And we are joined today by local legislators who are not on the Ways and Means Committee, but who have a very significant interest in this, most specifically Representative Barnhart, also local legislator Representative Nathanson, and I don't know that any other. We are also joined by Senate President Peter Courtney and Senate Majority Leader Kate Brown. Most of our time tonight will be dedicated to listening to you, so I don't want to spend much time other than to give you a very brief framework for tonight's hearing and a little bit of the ground rules. As I said, we are here to listen to you, help us make decisions about the state's budget. The state of Oregon's budget, when we consider all the funds that are spent providing services, is about $48 billion for the next two-year period. The general fund part of that is about $15 billion. At least that's the amount of general fund that is projected to be available under current law. And that is probably where most of the attention will go, because the general fund, as you probably know, is the money that has the least strings attached to it that can be used for any public service at all. Other funds usually have strings attached, and they are federal funds, for example, for health programs, which have to be spent on specific services. Tuition has to be spent on university services. Gas taxes have to be spent on the highway fund. The budget is really just about making choices and setting priorities. The governor has recommended a budget that reflects the choices he would like to make, that he would like the legislature to make on behalf of Oregonians. He assumed in his budget about $800 million of revenue that is not authorized under current law, that would require a change in statutes. Senator Schrader and I have proposed a recommendation to the Ways and Means Committee and to the legislature that does not assume most of that new revenue. You probably already know that the one requirement we have at the state level for a budget is that it has to be balanced. We are not allowed to spend money we don't have. We are not allowed to borrow in expectation of revenue coming in future years. And so as you give us some suggestions and ideas and tell us what your priorities are, I just ask you to keep in mind that any service you recommend be funded that hasn't been funded in the recommended budget, or that you would like to have funded at a higher level, there are only three ways for us to do what you would be asking. One is to cut funding for another service. The second would be to do other services more cheaply, either by efficiency improvements or other reductions. And the third one would be to raise new revenue, which is raising new taxes. And you may make those comments when you come up to the table to testify. Because we have a lot of people we'd like to hear from, and out of respect for all those people, we are going to limit testimony to 2 minutes each person. Senator Schrader will be providing the timekeeping services, and at 30 seconds, he will raise a yellow flag to give you a little warning, and at 2 minutes, he will raise a red flag, and it will be my responsibility to ask you to finish so that other people can come and identify their priorities. You are welcome to submit to us written testimony, and that applies whether you testify or even if you don't get to testify. We welcome that opportunity, and we will make sure every member of the committee gets that written testimony. And we are scheduled to run until 9 o'clock, so that you know that parameter as well. With that, I'm going to just start calling people up. We will call four people up at a time, and then I'll identify the people who are on deck so that you can help move through things quickly. Chris Chandler, please excuse me if I don't get your name right. DeTorres, Robin Burke, Tim Berry, and this name I know, Bob Ackerman. On deck, I have Dennis O'Neill, Jared Axelrod, Suzanne Clark, and Jeff Hurwit. Representative, would you like to start?
Well, I thank you for the courtesy, and welcome all of you to Eugene. It was my privilege to serve in the 2001, 3, and 5 legislative sessions, as well as many forgettable special sessions during that my tenure. There is life after the legislature. I've been a longtime advocate for community colleges, having served on the Lane Community College Board of Education on my first tour of duty in 1965, my second tour of duty in 1999, and I'm running opposed to the board at this time, so I'll going back for the third time in about 40 years. I'm here tonight as a community college advocate, but rather than hear always all this from me, let me call your attention to an editorial April 6, 07, in the Portland Oregonian. Quote, "The legislature's top budget writers have produced a spending blueprint that would again force cuts at universities and community colleges, drive away thousands of students, and heap more debt on and challenges on tens of hundreds of thousands of people. Oregon is going the wrong way, putting a crushing burden on students at the very time it needs college graduates and an educated workforce more than ever. It ought to horrify the leaders of this state that 49,000 community college students have been pushed away from schools by raising tuition. This is a substantial policy issue. I feel also that the governor's office, in its response to the $529 million response for the request by the community colleges, set forth a process that will be a financial catastrophe for the community colleges in Oregon. The request was for $529 million. He subtracted $46 million out of that to get to $483, and the co-chair's budget subtracted another $25 million, which puts the community colleges $71 million down in their request.
Thank you, Bob.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry, Bob.
I'm out. Thank you very much.
Let you know, since we've done a few of these hearings already, your enthusiasm is very welcome and appreciated, but it cuts into someone's chance to speak, so just keep that in mind as you applaud. Ma'am?
Good evening, Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan, members of the committee. I'm Chris Chandler-DeTorres, the economic developer for Lincoln County. I am here to implore you to restore funding to the Regional Investment Program. Voters created the lottery solely for economic development, new jobs, in a terrible recession. Since then, lottery fundings have been used for many other things. Yet, the Regional Investment Program honors the intent of the voters 20 years ago. Here, the Benton, Lane, Lincoln, Lynn Regional Investment Board has had tremendous success. In the past 4 years, with less than $2 million, we've helped create 1,132 jobs, leveraging more than $31 million in private investment. I'm here to speak for small business owners. What do these dollars mean to people? Take Orange Mate in Waldport. Orange Mate makes glass cleaners and air fragrances from citrus oil, selling them around the world. Orange Mate got a small grant to create jobs while making a large investment in building expansion. Their grant told them the state appreciated what they were doing rather than just sending the usual bill for withholding or unemployment tax. Willis Restoration, which beautifully refurbishes World War II Jeeps for collectors, wanted to move here from California, bringing jobs with good wages. The cost of moving equipment and materials was prohibitive. They were thrilled to receive regional investment dollars. OSU is creating a marine mammal institute in Newport. It will mean 60 to 90 new high-paying jobs in our rural community. The new building will cost $14 million, which OSU needs to raise from foundation, donors, and others. Regional investment supports those new jobs, too. I appreciate some of you may feel regional investment funds have not been used well elsewhere. Our board has done what you wanted. Ask anyone who has gotten a job at companies such as Molecular Probes here in Eugene, ViewPlus in Corvallis, Pacific Coast Boats in Toledo. Please refund the regional investment program. Help create new jobs for Oregonians. Quality of life begins with a job. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir.
Yes, thank you. My name is Tim Berry. I'm president and founder of Palo Alto Software, a software company based here in Eugene, just a few blocks from here. And I would like to be as specific as possible, talk as much as I can about facts. And one instance, we talk about small business. My wife and I moved this company from California to Eugene, Oregon in 1992. We were the only employees. We have 38 employees now who have purchased several dozen houses between them at different times. 12 of them have been through different classes at the Lane Community College. We are very grateful for the LCC program directly related to software testing and tech support, which has helped provide us with useful workers, and we are very grateful for programs that teach bookkeeping. Some of our people have been involved in programs that teach desktop publishing. And as business owners, we're very concerned that we might represent the rest of the iceberg that you don't often get to see as small business that really depends on the quality of education in the community, from top to bottom and at every point along the way. And I am here to support Lane Community College and what it does for a lot of other businesses like ours.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Last call for Robin Burke, who I called earlier. Not here. Okay, let's have Dennis O'Neill, Jared Axelrod, Suzanne Clark, and Jeff Hurwit. On deck, Patrick Neal, John Clegg, Derek Johnson, and Jerry Gatos. Please.
Okay. Chairman Schrader, Chairwoman Nolan, members of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. For the record, my name is Jared Axelrod, and I'm currently the president of the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Thank you for affording me the opportunity to speak to you today on such a pressing issue. I come in front of you this evening to speak on a matter that, as you know, is of the utmost importance on this campus and campuses all across the state. Higher education, as you're all aware, is the future of this great state. And in order to make this future a reality, we must not live in the past. The past I speak of is the dismal state of our post-secondary education system. According to the 2006 Measuring Up report, Oregon received an F in affordability, an F. Surely you are all aware of this disappointing fact. It has been reiterated ad nauseum by various media outlets, students, and most importantly, the people of Oregon. It is almost to the point of embarrassment to admit the location of the school that I attend to other professionals in the higher education field, as many, if not all, know of the current state of higher education in Oregon. Members of the committee, for this reason, I state the budget you have proposed for the Oregon University system and the community college system is unworkable to the near point of unacceptable. By supporting this budget, the state of Oregon will once again reaffirm that they support higher education through the campaign season, but after Election Day does not show it when it really matters. Talking specifically, the current budget put forth will only perpetuate the problems seen on this campus and campuses alike. First, this budget will increase the cost of tuition for students, forcing students to take out more loans, which are becoming more difficult to pay back in a timely fashion, drop out of school altogether, or not attend school in the first place. And I was actually told an interesting fact today that today at the University of Oregon, more money comes from out-of-state tuition than does from the state. Second, this budget will not support faculty, full-time faculty, to work for OUS schools. This will require non-tenure track faculty to fill in the spaces left by lack of professors. Speaking personally of the 10 classes I've taken this year and currently am taking, five of them are being taught by graduate PhD students. I will skip right to the end. Members of the committee, I urge you not to take the testimonies you have heard so far and will hear lightly. The future of this great state depends on it. The people sitting behind me depend on it, and they will be ignored no longer. As I said earlier, Oregon received an F in affordability. Senators and representatives, let us not continue this downward spiral, as doing so would only result in the only grade available at that point, which is, of course, an F minus. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Suzanne Clark. I'm an English professor at the University of Oregon, and I am one of the three presidents of the University Senate this year. I'd like to start by bringing you news of President Frohnmayer, who would have liked to have been here, but who underwent surgery for a broken leg today and sends his regrets to the committee.
Please send him our regards.
Yes, good. I would like to center my remarks today around a question asked in a poem by Langston Hughes. What happens to a dream deferred? A college education in our times is a necessary part of youthful dreams for the future. We need to provide access to every qualified young person in the state. This is a dream that the people of Oregon ought to guarantee. A college education, however, is beyond the reach of many of our youth. It's just too expensive. They give up on it before they finish high school. We need to ensure that if they work hard and get good grades, we will find a way to help them realize their dreams. Buildings. Capital construction requires a public-private partnership. The University of Oregon, for example, has done its part, and Oregon donors have come forward to invest in our future. But as the Senate has just happily acknowledged, the public also needs to do its share. The University of Oregon also has problems, as all institutions do, with faculty and administrative salaries. The University of Oregon maintains its greatness by the loyalty of its faculty and administrators, most of whom could make much more money elsewhere. Full professors here make nearly 20% less than their peers at other institutions. A dream deferred. What good is a degree, after all, in the liberal arts? It's good for many things. I leave you with that question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I have some. Please. Thank you.
Yes, I'm Dennis O'Neill, the Vice President for Instruction at Umpqua Community College in Roseburg. Oregon's community colleges operate in a world buffeted by economic, demographic, and political winds. We're affected by population trends. We must respond to technological change. The private economy has an impact on us. The amount of public revenue, whether it's rising or falling, and how those dollars are appropriated by the legislature has a bearing on what our boards and our college administrators must do. Often political bodies such as the Oregon Legislature and our locally elected boards of trustees face external pressures from different points of view, even antagonistically. Sometimes they're faced together and cooperatively. One of those occasions is upon us now as the result of the aging of the workforce and the need to provide new workers in large numbers. This occasion comes not in the next generation, not in the next decade. It arrives in the next 3 to 5 years. First, some interesting points about our student population in Douglas County. The National Institute for Literacy estimates that 47% of Douglas County adults, ages 16 and older, lack the sufficient foundation of basic literacy skills necessary to function adequately in today's society. Also, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce gives Oregon a failing grade for post-secondary and workforce readiness, noting that only 33% of ninth graders who finish high school go on to college. There are more students at Umpqua Community College than there are in the public school system countywide from kindergarten through K-12. There are more students taking reimbursable courses on our campus than there are public high school students in all of Douglas County. The average age of our students is 34. The retirement of the current workforce and the training and its replacements is a job that falls to the state's community colleges. The coming retirement exodus caused by baby boomers, combined with a sharp decline in the national birth rate, will result in a shortage of human capital and skilled labor that cannot be offset adequately by the immigration of skilled workers to the United States or into Oregon. Building the capacity of the state's community colleges in an area where the legislature and the local boards and communities will need to work together and cooperatively.
Thank you, Mr. O'Neill.
Thank you.
Can we try something if you would like to show your enthusiasm? It's called silent applause. We will be able to see you, and it won't slow the testimony down so that more of you will be able to actually get to the microphones. Please.
Chair Schrader and Nolan and members of the committee, my name is Jeffrey Hurwitt. I am professor of art history and classics at the U of O and have served as president of the University Senate twice, most recently last fall. I speak to you as someone who has been a faculty member in these halls for 27 years, who loves this state and who has devoted his career to this institution, but who has seen almost constant erosion in state support for higher education since 1980. When times have been bad, and you know there have been too many such times, the funding of higher education has often been slashed. That is certainly regrettable, but it may be understandable. What is not understandable, what is in fact incredible, is that even when times have been good, higher ed has been either seriously cut or funded far below the level required to restore it to health, much less improve or strengthen it. The members of your committee and the members of the legislature as a whole already know how critical education is to the future of the state of Oregon, not just to its economy, but to its stature among states and its attractiveness to a place to live. To its social well-being, even, I strongly believe, to its very democracy. What you need to do at long last, and I say at long last, is to act upon that knowledge. You have the power to give our sons and daughters greater access to higher education. You have the power to fund our colleges and universities so they can build facilities that are second to none and attract and keep the best faculty they can so that our youth will stay and learn here rather than pursue their dreams elsewhere to the benefits of other states, as hundreds and hundreds of our best and brightest students do each year. The system of higher education in the state of Oregon has been left behind literally for decades, and that has hurt Oregon. The Oregon university system will continue to fall behind and fall to a level from which it may never recover unless you and your colleagues act in this session to do whatever is necessary to fund education at all levels, even if it means finding new sources of revenue to do the job, a job that simply must be done. At long last, do what is right for our young women and men. At long last, invest in them. Invest in their talents. Invest in their minds. Invest in their hopes and in their future. Invest in Oregon. And I respectfully but urgently ask you, do it now. If you do, the state will be repaid many times over. Please do not adjourn until the governor's original budget request for higher ed has been fully funded. Thank you.
Excellent testimony. I'll invite Patrick, John, Derek, and Jerry to the witness tables. And on deck, we have Bobby Green Sr., Soren Anderson, Amber Murray, and Shirley Swank. Thanks a lot. Dive right in.
co-chairs Nolan and Schrader. I'm Jerry Gatos from the Oregon State Bar today. I'm a lawyer practicing here in Eugene, and I want to encourage you to read and reread the editorial that was in today's Oregonian about the third branch of government and how important that third branch of government is to our quality of life and to the effective justice system that we have. Right now, one of the important issues and probably one of the most top issues for the judiciary is judicial salaries, and the Oregon State Bar is supportive of that, and it's essential that that occur. The quality of the judiciary is something that really makes our quality of life important. One is I represent businesses, and we use the court system to ensure that contracts are enforced. We also attempt to ensure that human relationships and domestic relations and probate and other type things are taken care of in a way that really needs to ensure that that quality of the judiciary is there. Public safety is a system, and if you cut part of the system, it dramatically affects the other parts of the system, and there needs to be a balance that really makes that system work. Technology is extremely important to our system, as are court facilities, and there are items that are before you on each of those items. It's important also to reward innovation and efficiency, and if we don't have the court facilities and have the innovation continue, it's going to be a significantly worse issue for the quality of life of all those here in Lane County as out throughout the state. So I will close with saying allow the courts to be the customer service-oriented place that they are. Assist them with innovation. We need quality judges, and those are attracted partially by salary, but partially by public service. And I know that all the judges in Lane County are more attracted by public service than salary, but they truly deserve a raise at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir.
Representative Nolan, Senator Schrader, thank you very much for being here. It's a pleasure to appear before so many of my friends and people that I've known throughout Salem, and it's great to have you down here in Eugene, so thanks for being here. My name is Derek Johnson. I'm an attorney with the firm of Johnson, Clifton, Larson, and Schaller here in Eugene. I'm appearing tonight as the president of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. We're an association of attorneys that represents businesses and individual Oregonians in the courts throughout the state. We have members from Ontario to Astoria and from Portland to Medford. I'm here tonight as the president of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association to urge you to increase judicial salaries. I'm here in support of SB 456 to increase judicial salaries immediately. I'm here in support of SB 50 and SJR 1 to create a public officials compensation commission. Right now, you probably know that our state judges are the lowest paid state judges in the United States. They're 50th out of 51, and if there's not a raise given to them by July, they will be 51st behind Puerto Rico. Currently, they have the same purchasing power as they did in 1978 and 79. As trial lawyers, the members of my organization have firsthand experience working with the judges throughout this state. The state has a proud tradition of judges who are effective at resolving disputes, who are fair and courteous to litigants, and who also have impeccable integrity. We want to have them compensated at the level that they deserve so that we can both recruit and retain judges of the quality that we've grown used to having here in Oregon. We urge passage of SB 456, SB 50, and SJR 1 so that they are paid what they're entitled to, and so that Oregonians can be served by judges of the quality that they're used to. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs Schrader and Nolan, members of the committee. My name is John Clegg, and I'm speaking on behalf of the judicial branch. I come before you today in two capacities. First, as a member of the local public safety coordinating council, and I'm currently serving as chair. I have also served or chaired several committees which critically examine the Lane County justice system from an analytical perspective. Second, I am a retired captain from the Lane County Sheriff's Office, having served my community in that capacity for 30 years, the majority of it in corrections, administering a wide array of programs. In both capacities, I have worked closely and cooperatively with courts. My observation is this. If the governor's budget is not adopted, which results in reducing the proposed budget for the Oregon Judicial Department, while increasing funding for other components of the justice system, there will be unfortunate consequences which we need to avoid. An adequately funded judicial department simply inadequately funded judicial department simply creates the hydraulics of an out-of-balance system which pushes more offenders out of the overcrowded jail before having their cases adjudicated. Once this happens, getting them back into the system is very difficult, if not impossible. In the meantime, their criminal conduct continues, and the quality of life and safety of our community degrades further. I can tell you countless sad stories about victimization that was avoidable if there was a properly funded, balanced system. Underfunding the courts throws this system out of balance. Furthermore, the reduced budget will force the elimination of innovative programs which are effective in addressing criminal thinking and criminal behavior. Finally, in my experience, the courts desperately need improved technology. The current methods they are left with for handling the daunting volumes of paperwork have resulted in numerous problems in coordinating the handling of cases between the various players in the system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clegg. Last call for Patrick Neal. Okay.
I'll sit in for him if you'd like.
Thank you. Commissioner Green, Soren Anderson, Amber Murray, Shirley Swank. On deck, Russ Bergen, Dave Bielenberg, Nancy Fadley, and Karen Ecker. Go ahead and start. Ma'am?
Okay. Thank you for allowing me to testify regarding SB 5504 and HB 3034. My name is Shirley Swank, and I'm a member of the Lane County Commission on Children and Families. I joined the commission after retiring from 35 years of school counseling, teaching, and administration in schools, and I wanted to continue to advocate for children. The commission appreciates the resources allotted in the co-chair's budget, but frankly, they are not enough. The needs of children and families are acute, and public resources have dropped significantly over the past 7 years. Tonight, I respectfully ask you to include the $3 million increase in basic capacity funds for the commissions on children and families that is included in those two, in 5504, excuse me. I've served on lots of committees and lots of commissions in my time, and I want to tell you that the Lane County Commission on Children and Families is a very, very good and productive commission. We work hard and we do a lot of work in the community. We are volunteers. We rely on our hardworking staff and our efficient staff as they are the backbone of this that supports our effective and successful programs. We depend on basic capacity funds for our staffing. Let me tell you some of the other work that depends. Summer is a stressful time for families who rely on school meal programs for their children. Our commission decided to work with the Food for Lane County, a summer food program sponsor to provide free lunches to kids in the summer. I volunteered at Lowell, one of the 56 school sites in Lane County. As soon as we set up, the kids would come from all corners, and they don't have to sign up. Any child can eat, any age. Adults cannot eat, and they eat a good lunch. They even eat their salad, which is very interesting. They waste very little. We feel like there is very little waste in our work at Lane County Commission on Children. We support effective and cost-effective programs, but we can't continue
to meet.
Thank
you, Ms. Swank. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight on SB 5504 and SB 3034. My name is Soren, and I am the coordinator of the Family Resource Center at Laurel Elementary School in Junction City. We are one of nine family resource centers that are funded and supported by the Lane County Commission on Children and Families. Family resource centers provide parent support, parenting classes, homework clubs, academic assistance, and more, and it's a lot more. I can tell you it's a lot more. Let me tell you about one of our kids that I work with. John's a second grader from a very low-income family. He's really enthusiastic. He's got a lot of energy. He's one of those kids that's totally out of control in school. He never completed homework never. And he pretty much hated school even in the second grade. His parents enrolled him in our free after-school homework club, and let me tell you, that was a really rough start. However, I just left Jonathan a few hours ago. Today he completes all of his homework. He even does homework at home. He loves going to school now. He loves the after-school homework club. It's been a huge turnaround for him. His grades, his reading ability, and I think most importantly, his self-confidence in a school setting have improved greatly. This is John's story. There's 9 family resource centers, and all of those centers have stories just like this. Our family resource centers are a collaborative project between the school districts and the Lane County Commission on Children and Families. It is part of the commission's focus on prevention. Our programs are funded through the commission's basic capacity funds. I'm here because John and his family can't be here. I don't think John would want to be here. He's having fun at home right now. But on their behalf, and all the kids like Jonathan, I ask you to add the $3 million increase in basic capacity funds that is included in SB 5504. I thank you, and our families thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Commissioner?
First of all, thank you, Chair Nolan and Chair Schrader. First of all, welcome to Lane County, the great state of Lane County. This is also welcome to my alma mater here at the University of Oregon, which actually had the best team in the NC2A, so go Ducks. And that's be remiss if I didn't say that. Let me just say I'm wearing 2 hats tonight. First of all, as a Lane County Commissioner, I'm in support of your major investments as it relates to mental health services and human services that you have identified under major investments and initiatives here. The $100+ million, that's very important, as you're going to hear more later tonight about that. But also, from the perspective of the Association of Oregon Counties, which I am the president this year, I want to just call to your attention 2 things. One, the $50 million that you have identified not saying replace, but to help counties statewide who are suffering from the loss of timber receipts. And on that note, $50 million is really good. We appreciate that. But roughly the number is $90 million collectively for all the counties. It's like 33 out of 36 counties that will be losing timber dollars. So $50 million is great. We appreciate that. But $90 million is closer to the mark. And to that point, many of you were invited to the AOC legislative reception on Monday, and we left for you an update in the status report of PL 106-393. And if you don't have it, I know you've been on the road. It will be in your office by the time you get back. And what this is a status report on the current crisis facing all the counties here in Lane County, in the state of Oregon, but also how counties and the legislature can work together. As we've said to you many, many times, help us help ourselves so we can help our shared constituency around the state. And in closing, the counties appreciate the fact that you're going out on the road taking these testimonies, but also it's really good to see you here in my county and not so much in the halls over there in Salem. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Pam.
Thank you for allowing me to speak this evening on Senate Bill 5504 and House Bill 3034. And I also want to appreciate you guys coming to Eugene and speaking to the community. My name is Amber Murray, Program Coordinator for the Lane County Domestic Violence Council. I am here today to ask that the Commission on Children and Families Basic Capacity Budget be increased by $3 million. The Commission on Children and Families has been integral in gaining needed recognition and credibility for the Domestic Violence Council, and housing it within our local department is an excellent example of how the Commission uses its basic capacity funding. Some of our collaborations are the Western Oregon Women's Conference, whose founder is the department director at our local commission, the proceeds of which help fund the Domestic Violence Council. A successful grant request from the Office on Violence Against Women to end violence in the lives of women with disabilities, which the Department of Children and Families is a lead on and works closely with our Domestic Violence Council coordinator in making successful. What if the Domestic Violence Council never existed? The first time that Mary's neighbor called 911, responders told Mary's partner to walk around the block and cool off.
Okay.
The second time they arrested him, but Mary was too afraid to press charges, so he was never prosecuted. When she finally ended up in the hospital, no one asked if she was safe at home. Because of the council's work, our county has increased training with our local law enforcement agencies, has been working on continuing to provide evidence-based prosecutions to allow a prosecution to take place without the testimony of a victim, and outreaches to hospitals and doctors' offices to provide trainings and literature on domestic violence. The Commission has created additional funding opportunities, leads fundraising efforts to continue the work of the Council, and provides the necessary contacts needed to be a well-respected program. Please reconsider and allocate the additional $3 million in basic capacity to the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll invite Russ, Dave, Representative Fadley, and Karen. And we'll have on deck Janet Carlson, Eduardo Angulo, Karen Elliott, and Gillian Wessenberg. You look ready to go. Let's dive in.
Representative Nolan, Senator Schrader, members of the committee. My name is Dave Bielenberg. I live in Marion County, northeast of Silverton. I am chairman of the East Valley Water District and Irrigation District in northeast Marion and south Clackamas counties, the two largest agricultural producing counties in the state. I am asking that some funds be directed towards water, an essential resource often taken for granted in western Oregon, but one that is becoming more and more stressed. Our group of 70 ag producers representing 20,000 acres in the area began in 1991 trying to address the stressed water resources in our area that include three limited groundwater areas, at least three over-appropriated fish-bearing streams, and the growing urban pressures in the cities of Silverton, Woodburn, Mount Angel, and Molalla, and additional rural homes all compete with agriculture for water. We began with an assessment of what our practices were and what our options were, what our options might be to help the resource. This led us to focus on low elevation water storage as a viable and productive solution. We have spent many hours of work and about $650,000 private dollars answering questions asked by the public about the effects on public resources such as fish and wildlife, stream flows, water temperatures, wildlife habitat, cultural resources, as well as the basic questions of will it work and does it make sense. Having worked on two sites that proved to be not feasible, we have a project proposed on Drift Creek south of Silverton. Preliminary engineering and environmental evaluations have shown this to be an excellent site that can meet public requirements and serve our district needs. We are seeking a public partner and funds to complete the environmental assessment of this project required for permitting, and funds to complete the engineering work required to better identify the total cost of this project. Our request is included in Senate Bill 781. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Sheriff?
Good evening, Chair Schrader, Chair Nolan, members of the committee. Thank you for coming to Eugene, giving us an opportunity to address you today. My name is Russ Berger. I'm the sheriff of Lane County, and I'm speaking to you tonight on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. And I urge you to adopt the governor's recommended budget for 2007 and 2009 as it relates to community corrections funding. Senate Bill 1145 has been a nearly successful state and county partnership, committed to the mission of enhancing public safety through offender accountability, valuing offender rehabilitation, services to victims, crime prevention, and restoration. I say nearly because since its inception, Senate Bill 1145 has never fully funded the community correction system. Most counties in Oregon have been subsidizing the state because the original formula did not result in an amount that recovered the actual cost for counties to incarcerate, supervise, and treat offenders. Two counties have opted out of this partnership for that reason. The governor's proposed budget for community correction was not pulled out of a hat. The recommendation is a result of extensive discussions involving Oregon jail managers, Oregon community corrections directors, the Oregon Department of Corrections, and the Governor's Office. The recommendation is based upon an actual cost study and captures the true costs associated with this program for most counties involved statewide. The Oregon State Sheriff's Association urges you to adopt the governor's proposal to provide full funding for community corrections so that counties no longer subsidize the state of Oregon through this program. If I had time, I'd talk to you about two other very important programs. One of those is funding for Healthy Start, and the other one is the Relief Nursery. I'll leave you written testimony about both of those programs as well as my testimony tonight on community corrections. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan, members of the committee, thank you for coming to Eugene. I'm Nancy Fadley, co-president of the League of Women Voters of Lane County. The League of Women Voters is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages informed and active participation of citizens in government. After study, we have developed priorities that relate to the budget for this session. I'm not going to talk to you about all those priorities. Instead, just want to tell you about one of them, and that has to do with homeless youth. The League of Women Voters of Oregon have published a study called Oregon's Homeless Youth, which I hope you've seen and which you certainly, I think, can use. And the League of Women Voters of Lane County also has done a study on homeless and runaway youth. And Karen Ecker, who co-chaired the Lane County League committee that studied, that produced this publication, is going to talk to you about that.
Thank you. Co-Chairs Schrader and Nolan, members of the committee, for the record, I am Karen Ecker of the League of Women Voters of Lane County. We appreciate the opportunity to address this committee without having to travel to Salem. In 2001, the National Coalition for the Homeless stated that the homeless youth are the fastest growing segment of the homeless population. Between November 2005 and February 2006, the Homeless and Runaway Youth Study Committee from the Lane County League of Women Voters interviewed experts at more than 40 social service agencies and school districts in Lane County, as well as homeless and runaway youth themselves, gathering data about this problem locally. We learned the following. In the federal year 2004 to 2005, between 2,400 and 3,000 homeless and runaway youth made contact with social service agencies in Eugene-Springfield, where most Lane County providers are located. There are many barriers to getting services for these youth. These include lack of awareness of their availability, lacking transportation, they cannot get to the agencies, agencies do not have enough capacity and funding, services are not sufficiently coordinated, youth are afraid that agencies may place them back in their homes or schools. After experiencing freedom, youth don't like being told what to do. They lack a social security number, so they cannot get into certain programs that receive federal or state funds. Some agencies lack cultural competence. Some youth have cognitive difficulties that prevent them from filling out forms. And street culture may prevent youth from seeking help. There are also gaps in services. Every provider we interviewed mentioned a decline in funding for services for this population. Most important and mentioned most often were the lack of housing, followed by the shortage of substance abuse and mental health treatment. Other inadequacies. Can you wrap it up, Ms. Ecker? Thank you. Thank you. Janet Carlson, Eduardo Angulo, Karen Elliott, Gillian Wessenberg, on deck, Barbara Matthews, Mary Spilde, Mayor Piercy, and Michael Rose. Commissioner?
Hello. Can we go ahead?
Welcome.
I'm Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. 10 years ago, I completed my PhD program here at the University of Oregon, and my focus was on children and families policy, so it probably won't be a surprise that I'm here today to support Senate Bill 5504, which is the Children and Families Commission budget. In Marion County, we have a top-notch commission. We have leaders from business. We have leaders from the faith community. We have all the different agencies, state, county, nonprofit represented, public safety, and Senator Jackie Winters also serves. And as a county commissioner, I rely on them because they help do the digging and the research and help make those recommendations that make my job a lot easier. We have a strategic plan, and Senator Schrader will appreciate that we have goals, objectives, and measurable results within that strategic plan, and I will leave you a copy for your review. I want to give you a couple examples of things that our commission has accomplished. Example number one, one of our business leaders learned in going to a meeting with the providers that all the kids who were being pulled out of meth homes, 6-7 at a time in the middle of the night, they had no place to put them, and they were taking them out to Silverton Road to the DHS office, and they would sit in a cube from 2 o'clock in the morning until 8 a.m. when offices would open, and they'd start dialing around trying to find homes for them. This business leader went to his cohorts at the chamber and had a 45-minute meeting, and they raised $200,000. 4 months later, they opened a receiving home in Marion County, and now siblings can stay together for up to 2 weeks while a placement is found for them that's suitable, and we can keep siblings together. This is an example of what people working together can do. Our business leaders also held a breakfast 2 years ago because they knew we needed more foster homes. They set a target to recruit 75 new homes out of the faith community. They met that target about 8 months later. So the next year, they had another breakfast, expanded the group, and said, we need 250 homes. We're now at 118. Plus the 75 that we got before. This is what happens when people work together. And also what we're going to do this next year is we're going to include volunteers and mentors as part of that breakfast and get people to walk beside these families and these kids as they're reintegrating into the community. So in conclusion, what I want to tell you is that this doesn't happen by itself. We need the $3 million in basic capacity that you've heard of. We also have essential services. You'll hear Karen Elliott talk about Healthy Start, and the relief nursery is $2.5 million. We've had these funds cut 51% since 1999 with the flexible funds. Relief nurseries have only been increased 6% since 1999. Three nurseries then, seven counties with nurseries now. Thank you.
Thank you. Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan, my name is Jillian Wiesenberg, and I'm the Douglas County Commission on Children and Families Chair, and I'm here tonight to read for Pastor Steve Shannawerk. He's a pastor at the Winston Community Baptist Church. He would be here tonight, but he's having a service that he's preaching at, and he wanted me to send his regards to Representative Morgan and also to thank Senator Carter for coming to the Winston First Citizen a couple years ago and speaking and singing. The people still are talking about that, and they remember it fondly. Pastoring a church in Winston is a never-ending challenge. Hopelessness is the common vocabulary of the community. At least weekly, I answer my phone to hear the despair and despondency of someone who is literally at the end of their resources. Those are the times the Commission on Children and Families has been my greatest ally. Locally invested funds for the commission keeps our local warm line accessible. Recently, an official with our school district called about a special needs child and the family. I referred them to the warm line, where they were put in touch with the right people at the right place to meet their needs at the right time. Not increasing basic capacity and locally invested funds for the local commissions will make it more difficult for me to link people who have needs with those who have resources. Further budget cuts will only feed the hopelessness that threatens to overwhelm many of these people. The Douglas County Commission on Children and Families provided the Winston Area Community Partnership a link to provide regular after-school activities for children in the Winston-Dillard School District. Those dollars leveraged a 21st century school grant. Many of the children who attended the first years of the program funded by the commission are now succeeding in high school and beyond. Community organizations like the Winston Area Community Partnership need an ally like the commission. Their expertise, their advocacy, and their commitment to the well-being of families in my community are essential to building a platform of hope and sustaining true community. I support Senate Bill 5504 with $3 million more for basic capacity.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sir?
For the record, my name is Eduardo Angulo. I'm the chairman of the Salem-Kaiser Coalition for Equality. Our coalition is made up of 10 Latino and African-American community organizations. We came together 7 years ago to help address the disproportionate disciplinary suspension rate, dropout rate, and graduation rate of Latino and African American students in our schools in the Salem-Kaiser neighborhoods. 15 months ago, I made the decision to join the Marion County Commission on Children and Families because of the overwhelming reach of the meth epidemic, combined with the aggressive recruitment and appeal of the gang culture. They were too much for a minority community organization to confront. In the past 15 months, since I joined the Commission on Children and Families, I have been working with the most committed group of community leaders, and I think Commissioner Janet Carlson just talked about that. Instead of complaining, we have been working instead of incarceration, we have been working on prevention. The task of confronting the pervasive meth, crime, and gang epidemic in Marion County are monumental. They have been overwhelming our local and county institutions and us volunteers. The result is that our children are the ones who are suffering the most because of these epidemics. We all Oregonians need to invest in our children. They are our future. Today's investment in our children reduces future costs to taxpayers and society at large from crime, loss of human capital, and countless social problems. Because of all these reasons, the Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality and the Marion County Commission on Children and Families encourages all these members of this committee to fully support Senate Bill 5504 to increase the funds for basic capacity for our local commissions on children and families. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Representative Nolan and Senator Schrader. My name is Karen Elliott. I've worked my 37-year nursing career in the field of maternal child nursing. I am presently a member of the Marion County Children and Families Commission, which you've been hearing about, and I serve as the chair of our local Healthy Start Advisory Board in that county. As each meeting starts on the advisory board, I've set it as a goal to start our meeting with a family story, confidentially told by one of the family service workers. These touching stories of struggle and success helps to keep our group grounded in the work we do. There are stories like this of two young unemployed parents, both with histories of child abuse in their own backgrounds, struggling to know how to nurture a new baby. Our full-time working Hispanic father, who is willingly and successfully parenting his son alone, needing to do so because his wife has severe mental illness. A 13-year-old teen struggling to stay in school and care for her baby due to a molestation that caused her pregnancy. The progress made by a deaf mother in learning ways to communicate with her hearing child. These parents say that they could not have been successful parents without the visits of a Healthy Start worker. The families and babies seen in the Healthy Start home visit program have multiple and complicated needs, as you can see. But with this opportunity to visit once a week up to 3 years, they can be successful. Healthy Start children have 2 times better chance of avoiding abuse and neglect than any other children served that are not served. They also have much improved chance of arriving at school healthy and ready to learn. I ask that you restore the funding for all the Children and Families Commission prevention programs because they not only save our children,
but
they save money.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Barbara Matthews, Mary Spilde, Mayor Piercy, and Michael Rose, please. On deck, Bob Noble, Run Stock, Galen Phipps, and Martin Rafferty.
Representative Nolan, Senator Schrader, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Spilde. I'm president of Lane Community College. We know that a college education is vital to productive employment and career success in the future. We know emphatically that the more education a person has, the more earning power he or she has, and the more likely he or she is to be unemployed. We also know some very disappointing statistics. Oregon ranks third among 15 Western states for the highest community college tuition. Oregon ranks 45th among states for families' ability to afford community college. Oregon ranks 46th among states
for state funding per student. Is this what we want for Oregon? Less than 50% of beginning high school freshmen enter higher education, yet 87% of the new jobs projected for Oregon require at least an associate degree. There is a huge disconnect. Knowing this, Oregon still continues to disinvest in higher education, particularly in community colleges. How does Oregon expect to be competitive? I was recently elected to the board of our national association, the American Association of Community Colleges. I sit with presidents representing 36 states. As we talk around the table, I find that Oregon is the poster child for disinvestment. Other states are investing in their community colleges. They are thinking about growing and enhancing what they do. We need to do the same. Otherwise, we won't have the competitive workforce that we need. Again, is this what we want for Oregon? If community colleges are funded at the 529 level, there is a glimmer of hope. We've been patient. All through the 90s, we were told to wait, and it would be our turn. In 2001, it was, and we know how long that lasted. And in fact, your budget is $4 million short of that allocation in 2001. If not now, then when? Please fund us at $529 million. Thank you.
Chairman Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee, thank you for coming and listening to us this evening. I'm Barbara Matthews. I'm a member of the Commission for Children and Families of Douglas County and a longtime Riddle, Oregon resident representing tonight Jabe Giannotti, our superintendent of schools. As superintendent of Riddle School District, I see a large number of students who are not well-fed, well-dressed, or well-bathed. These children have to go home after school to situations that are not safe or supervised. We live in a rural community which is heavily timber dependent. The unemployment rates are high. Riddle has a high rate of substance abuse, which creates unsafe settings such as the homes of our students. Often our students have to attend to parents recovering from drug or alcohol binges or neglected siblings. Some students are afraid to go home alone because of safety concerns or unsafe neighbors. Realizing all of the above factors, I thank the Douglas County Commission on Children and Families for their technical assistance and financial support. The Riddle School District, in partnership with the Commission and Safe Place for Kids, provides an after-school program called Kids Place at the elementary school. The program provides additional educational opportunities and enrichment activities that enable participating students to meet or exceed state benchmarks. Also offered is a safe and supervised environment where students receive a snack, physical exercise, homework assistant. We will not be able to provide these experiences for our students in need if the Ways and Means Committee doesn't add the additional $3 million to the Basic Capacity Fund in Senate Bill 5504. The Commission on Children and Families are great partners to rural communities who have no other technical assistant or other resources. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader, I wish to, as Mayor of Eugene, to welcome you to our community and thank you for the opportunity for our community to speak to you. Tonight, all of us speak of important needed funding in our community. I urge you and your colleagues to move us forward, regaining our state leadership on many fronts, including community colleges. Community colleges are the door to the future for our young people and for an ever-changing and evolving workforce. The funding challenges for community colleges puts that all at risk. The current budget proposal for community colleges would have a devastating effect on Lane Community College. Lane's deficit would grow to $6.2 million for 2007-08. Lane faces three unacceptable options should the co-chair's proposal be adopted. One, cut career and technical programs. Training programs are costly but are critical to our workforce needs. Cutting programs will result in serious workforce shortage, more than currently exists. Second thing that they would have to do, lay off staff, contributing to the loss of family wage jobs. Lane is a major employer with more than 1,000 employees. Three, increase tuition. Tuition has grown a whopping 92% in 6 years, from $38 per credit hour to $73 per credit hour. It is no wonder that more and more folks in our community feel higher ed is beyond their means. To meet an additional 1.5 shortfall, Lane would have to cut about twice as much from its budget. What effect will that have on our local economy, the state's economy, and the future of our young people? Oregon's economic future depends on a trained and educated workforce. I am here tonight to join others in asking for you to appropriate at least $529 million to the Community College Support Fund in 2007. Lane Community College is a great community asset, well-run and hardworking. It is an essential part of our social and economic infrastructure. I'm here to ask you to recognize that, what they mean to our city and our state, and to see they are funded in a way that moves us forward, not further down the hill of decline. I thank you for this opportunity, and
thank you.
Good luck.
Welcome, committee. I'm Michael Rose, a member of Lane Community College Board of Education. And while all levels of education need adequate and reliable funding, I'm here to talk about community college needs. Since 2001, state funding for community colleges dropped $28 million in real dollars, while the state added colleges. Each legislative session, we are told community colleges needs will be addressed in the next session. Now is the time. Since 2001, Lane's tuition has moved from $38 to $73. We have also been forced to increase the ratio of part-time staff to full-time and eliminate community service programs. It's not fair to ask the staff to finance Lane Community College, a public institution, with pay cuts or freezes. The proposed budget would be disastrous for community colleges. The governor's proposed budget would require Lane to cut $4.5 million this year, and we cut $4 million last year, eliminating over 30 positions and leaving 42 positions unfilled. Providing affordable education, and this means we simply cannot provide affordable education and provide community services as the state mandates for community college missions. Even with the $529 million funding request, Lane will cut $2.3 million this year. Programs most likely to be cut will be the vocational tech, which are more expensive, and required classes will not be available for students to complete their programs on time. And I remind you that most people talk about the importance of education in this society, and many of you campaigned on support for education, and I'd like to remind you it's what you do that will define you, not what you said you will do.
Noble, Runstock, Galen Phipps, and Martin Rafferty to the tables. And on deck, Judy McCartney, Aaron Bonner, Mary Mosier, and Steve Gerard. Please start.
Chair Nolan, Chair Schrader, I'm here. My name is Galen Phipps. I'm the chair of the Oregon Homeless and Runaway Youth Coalition. And I'm here this evening to concerning the statewide and Lane County issue of runaway and homeless youth. Oregon's response to the needs of runaways, their families, and homeless youth is long overdue. Many reports have been done on this issue over the last 20 years. The most recent report, the League of Women Voters, completed this spring, and you heard from representatives of the League earlier this evening. They all say basically the same thing. Communities need services to protect and assist vulnerable, disenfranchised, runaway, and homeless youth. In addition, no state agency is responsible for the coordination of services for this population. Existing services around the state are successful examples of what impacts funding can have to help these youth and families, but not all youth around the state have access to services. Further outcomes and impacts of these services are in the handouts that I've provided for you. Senate Bill 5504, the Oregon Commission on Children and Families budget bill, has $1 million to establish dedicated resources to each county to create, enhance, and expand shelter and emergency services. However, to meet the critical need, especially in rural and coastal counties, and to accelerate the rollout of services, $4.6 million, the original request of the Commission on Children and Families, is recommended and supported by the Oregon Homeless and Runaway Youth Coalition, the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, and the Coalition for Advocates for Equal Access for Girls.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senators, my name is Martin Rafferty. I don't have a lot of statistics for you or program I'm speaking as a youth, a former runaway youth. I didn't run away so I could hang out with friends. I ran away because I was being abused. Last night, I went to 7-Eleven and I tipped the employee a dollar. You can do that at 7-Eleven. And I told the employee that this dollar is more than what the state of Oregon is giving to runaway and homeless youth. No money is allocated to homeless and runaway youth in Oregon. One of you, I don't know who, you can say who, asked in another session, isn't there someone helping you? Isn't there someone in the state who's funding runaway and homeless youth? No, there is not. No one is helping homeless and runaway youth. The Lane County is in need of money. Oregon is in need of money for homeless runaway youth. There's no one else who will help. The stereotypes are crushing. We don't do drugs. We leave abusive situations, and we need help because there is no help. Our families are impoverished, and most of the time, 80% of runaway and homeless youth are leaving families of poverty. There's no aunts or uncles that can help. The state is the only one who can help. Higher education is great. These other programs are great. They need to be funded. But this is life and death. It rains in Oregon. We get made fun of all the time that it rains in Oregon. And if you watch The Simpsons, you'll see that we get joked about because we have homeless people here. We have a cold, rainy state and a lot of needy, homeless youth. Please fund us. Don't go back and fund higher education without funding youth who are homeless, who have nowhere to go. I had nowhere to go. And facilities like Station 7 and Looking Glass and other places helped me. They helped me, and now I'm okay. I can wear a tie, and I have somewhere to go. I have a job. Please fund them. Please.
Good evening, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Ron Stock. I'm medical director of the Center for Medical Education and Research at Sacred Heart Medical Center here in Eugene. I'm also a geriatrician and family physician that has practiced in this community for 18 years. The governor's recommended budget included an expected funding of a little over $7 million to establish a regional medical education program like ours that we're establishing here in Eugene. We were dismayed to see that the co-chair's budget does not include the $7 million to expand the medical education project across the state. I've asked the staff to distribute a one-page fact sheet for your information. We simply need to train more physicians in this state. It is clear now, it's pretty much consensus, that there will be a physician shortage over the next 10 years that will be quite significant. We will also, as you may know, we also have a maldistribution of physicians in the state, and this will be much more significant in our rural areas of Oregon. In the last 2 years, a little over 1,200 physicians left practice in the state of Oregon. OHSU, our only medical school, trained 200 physicians during that same period of time. We know from about 20 years of experience that about half of those physicians trained will actually stay in the state. And so it's extremely important that we know that we're not going to keep up with the demand. This program is a rare opportunity for us to leverage both public and private funds to increase medical student education in this state. Obviously, we could build another medical school, but that is not a cost-effective way of expanding medical school training. And this is a rare opportunity for us to collaborate with the University of Oregon and health systems like Peace Health here in Eugene and Good Samaritan to increase medical student education. Thank you. I urge you to reinstate
Thank
that.
Thank you. Sir.
Good evening, co-chairs Nolan and Schrader, and distinguished members of the committee. My name is Bob Noble, and for a few more days, I'm the airport manager for the City of Eugene and also a member of the Lane Community College Aviation Advisory Committee. I'm here tonight to speak in support of funding community colleges at the magic number of $529 million. And even with that, as testimony was given, that is going to cause still $2 million in reductions. And if what I heard correctly tonight was that the vocational technology programs may be affected by that, I wanted to let you know how important it is that we don't do that. I'm a product of Lane Community College. My wife is a product both as a student and a teacher for the last 20 years, and my son is a product of Lane Community College. I know how good this school is, and I really urge that we not cut the programs that would be associated with a reduction in the proposal. On a professional note, I've been involved with the community college for a number of years with their aviation maintenance program and their flight tech program, and both of those programs produce graduates that get good paying jobs that are employable immediately upon graduation. In fact, some of them get employment opportunities offers before they graduate. The aviation programs are important to the industry. According to the FAA, our nation's pilot workforce will be the lowest that it's been since World War II. There are slightly more than 600,000 pilots currently in the U.S., and Boeing Company has forecasted that they will produce 27,000 new aircraft and it'd be a demand for 200,000 pilots by 2025. The LCC staff has established a goal to increase enrollment by 30% to ensure the program is meeting demand and is fully self-supporting, which is a goal of the college. The aviation industry and associated travel activities account for 9% of this nation's natural growth product. It's vital that the community college retain its involvement in aviation education business. Licensed pilots and aircraft mechanics are valued trades with a proven demand for employment.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mary Mosier and Steve Girard. And on deck, C. Sturgill, Gary Radikowski, John Hill, and Mickey Garrison. Let's get started.
Hi, my name is Erin Bonner. I'm with Shelter Care. Thank you very much to the co-chair, Schrader, and Nolan, and the committee for this opportunity. Shelter Care provides housing and supportive services for people with disabilities, people with acquired brain injuries, and emergency shelter for families with children. We strongly support the Housing Alliance's proposal to add an additional $100 million in affordable and supportive housing across the state. We want to thank you for including $100 million in your budget and for recognizing that housing costs are out of reach and it is time for Oregon to invest in housing for hardworking families and our neighbors on fixed incomes. We also ask you to keep funding in the budget, $50 million total, from general funds, lottery funds, and public purpose charges. Just providing housing alone is not enough. Providing the supportive services to keep people in housing is also essential to these individuals and to the communities they live in. Later, you'll hear a story from one of our consumers and her story and success would not be possible without a combination of funds for supported housing as well as supportive services. More families will need shelter, and families will continue to struggle to move from shelter to safe and stable housing if more affordable housing is not made available. In addition, our one community program here in Eugene, called the Yulehorn Program, serves low-income adults with acquired brain injuries. At Yulehorn, people learn the skills necessary to live with traumatic brain injuries and regain independence in apartments designed to meet their needs. This amazing program is the only one of its kind in the state and relies on support from senior and disabled services. I hope you will continue to support all community health programs and particularly programs like Yulehorn in your budget deliberations this session.
Thank you. Yes, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for coming to Lane County. I'm Mary Mosier. I'm a member of the Extension Citizens Advisory Network, a 4-H leader, and a 4-H parent. And I'm one person representing a lot of other Extension volunteers and supporters. And if they could do that silent wave for us, we'll see how many are in the room. And hello. I'm sure there's lots more outside the room. I would like to speak in behalf of Senate Bill 5515 that's asking for $15 million in support of OSU Extension statewide. Extension educates from pretty much an infant through old age. It starts in fourth grade with 4-H, but a lot of times younger siblings will pick up on those things that are offered and available for 4-H at a much younger age. Education is a key in our society, no matter what level you're at. And I would like to make sure that you're aware that Extension provides that from cradle to grave. The Extension service is available to impact areas with youth, agriculture, community vitality, forestry, Sea Grant, and technology services. And if you've heard mentioned tonight in other speakers, you've also heard the word extension come up in coordination with the Mammal Institute in Reedsport. It also works with family and children, and many of the agencies just spoke before you tonight. For every one extension faculty, they reach 150 volunteers. Of those 150 volunteers, they turn around and reach another 150 people. The examples are is shown in leadership, community service, citizenship, and hands-on learning through 4-H.
Thank
you. And some of you may have seen our youth at Know Your State Government.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. I'm a winemaker, and I'm sorry I didn't bring any samples because I figure you guys could probably use a glass of wine right about now.
My name's Steve.
My name's Steve Girard. I own Ben Lane Winery. I'm chairman of the Oregon Wine Board and president of the Oregon Wine Growers Association. And the reason I'm here tonight is to explain the importance of a partnership that we have put together between OSU, the wine industry, and the state of Oregon to form an institute, a research institute. And I'm told that you will know this as one of three statewide public service agency budgets, the Ag Experimental Station and OSU Extension Service. The Oregon wine business is really taking off right now. People all over the world are drinking for the first time and enjoying Oregon wine. But we have a lot of problems out there. I've got some ugly junk in my vineyard, and it's they call it short shoot syndrome, but nobody knows what it really is, and it's spreading all over the place. And we need the expertise of this institute and the expertise of OSU to tell us what it is and solve it, because it's taking over. We formed this partnership. OSU is going to fund four positions in this institute. The industry, the wine industry, has put up $2 million. And the state, the governor, put in his budget five and a half positions, or $1.2 million. So this is just short shoot syndrome is just one of the little problems that we have. There's a whole bunch of them that we need the answers to. So I'm asking for your support in funding something that has been agreed upon
and it would be this exciting new institute. I really thank you for your time, and I'm sorry that I didn't bring the wine.
I'd like to thank the committee first for giving me the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Judy McCartney. I am a shelter care resident at Royal Avenue. I'm here to try to draw attention to the need for funding for community mental health programs and supportive housing. 4 years ago, I was a productive member of this community, and due to a traumatic event in my life, lost everything. I lost my job, I lost my family, and I lost my friends. If it were not for shelter care giving me housing, I had no purpose and was ready to use our beautiful Ferry Street Bridge to end my life. I cannot stress enough that I had nowhere to go if it wouldn't have been for this mental health system. We need $116 million this biennium to stabilize the existing community mental health system and start building evidence-based services that really help people live independent lives. The co-chair's budget only invested $9.6 million in the front end, which will not get us to where we need to be. And believe me, I never thought that I would be in the position of having to use these services, nor understand what it's like to be, I'm not geriatric, but I'm not young, in need of mental health services. They have given me a purpose in my life and a reason to go on. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Let's invite C. Sturgill, Gary Radikowski, John Hill, and Mickey Garrison to the tables. And we'll have on deck Peter Manti, Chris Lira, Claudia Hardwick, and Patty Katz.
My name is Jonathan Hill, and I'm a governor in the Oregon State Board of Bar, the Oregon State Bar, and I do support the Chief Justice's budget and encourage you to do the same and support the comments were made earlier. I'm here this evening in my role as superintendent of the Douglas Education Service District, and I want to strongly encourage support of the $6.245 billion funding level for K-12 education. The $6 billion is essential for ESDs and school districts to sustain core services for all students. Tonight, I will speak specifically to the $260 million school improvement fund. In the 2005 session of the legislature under Senator Walker's leadership, House Bill 3184 was adopted. It created a powerful and dynamic working relationship between ESDs and their component school districts that is substantially increasing collaborative, cost-effective efforts to improve student learning. Under this bill, each ESD region builds a local service plan with major components of special education, technology, school improvement, and administrative services. ESDs, working with the Oregon Department of Education, have enthusiastically embraced this new approach. We have collectively employed 2.5 director-level staff to assure that our efforts in these areas are well-designed, strategic, and coordinated statewide. And Dr. Garrison will speak to you in a moment as one of those people. The law specifically outlined our work in school improvement. It has been done statewide. Attached to my testimony are pages taken from the Douglas ESD's local service plan. They detail how we will be providing those services collaboratively with our component school districts. Despite the slight reduction in ESD funding in the last session, Douglas ESD is about to build a strong infrastructure to do this work. We have reallocated $286,000 from existing resources to put all the pieces in place. The $260 million targeted for school improvement fund is sufficient to provide Douglas ESD with $9 per ADMW. For our ADMW of $17,637, we'll be allocated $158,700. We pledge to deliver to you and to the students of Douglas County a highly effective package of school improvement services. As you can see, each entry in our plan has its individual promise to improve student achievement. The design of local service plans in House Bill 3184 creates a strong regional investment in school improvement, unlike any other state in the union. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about something that's near and dear to my heart and essential for student learning and achievement and helping every child in our state reach their potential. I want to talk to you about House Bill 2614.
And your name, please?
Mickey Garrison.
Thank you.
I can honestly tell you that the approach that my profession has used in the past and to present has been a spray and pray approach, hoping that something's going to hit and stick and we're going to be able to run with it and it's going to make a difference in student learning. Unfortunately, after 32 years in the state as an educator, I can tell you honestly that what we've achieved is islands of excellence. And what I mean by that is we've seen isolated schools excel and do well and reach the kids that have been fortunate enough to attend that particular building. I was lucky enough to be principal of such a school, and please know that it wasn't what I did, but what my staff did that enabled students who were at a high poverty level to reach incredible achievement levels. However, I can honestly tell you that I am not satisfied with the fact that we have islands of excellence. It is critical that we create land masses and that our entire state have the opportunity and every child in our state have the opportunity to achieve and reach his or her potential. 2614 talks about a focused approach to staff development, and I can tell you that after doing a series of trainings nationwide, that there is very little that comes close to helping principals, helping staff, and helping students reach what it is that is critical, and that is learning. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you. Ma'am.
Okay. I'd like to thank you guys for this opportunity.
Could we get some sound speak? Help, please? I know.
You're all dead.
A little help with the sound system, please.
We can hear you all right if you want to go.
Magic.
You just want me to go anyways?
Give them a minute and see if we can get it going.
Test. Put you on the spot at the beginning.
Your mics work, Jonathan?
I can talk.
No, there's nothing. It's the whole system.
Test.
Technology grinds to a halt. Thank you, Mr. Hill. Thank you. Is that the one? I got one of those. Thank you.
Lose control here.
I know. I think we're going to. Get going. Okay. Any chance you know
totally cut the whole system.
Someone hit a plug somewhere.
Okay, I'm just gonna tell him to come up and talk to us. I think we're gonna have to go the old-fashioned way. I don't want to waste your time. You've invested a lot of time already to come and give us some advice and suggestions, and I think we ought to just move along. We will perk up our ears quite a bit, but let's just please proceed.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for the opportunity to speak here tonight. My name is Cassie Sturgill, and I'm speaking on behalf of Funding Oregon State Extension, which is covered in Senate Bill 5515. My name is Cassie Sturgill, and instead of speaking just broadly on extension, I'm focusing mainly on 4-H, which I have been a 9-year member of. I've been involved for 9 years, and I participate in sheep photography and public speaking projects. Each of these project areas has their own benefits. My sheep project has taught me to be responsible to finish every task I begin, and my photography has allowed me to be creative and express myself. And my public speaking, well, it brought me here, so obviously it's done me some good. 4-H is crucial to our community. During the past 9 years, I've developed a sense of community and pride and an eagerness to serve other people. I've participated in numerous meaningful activities, whether it be making fleece pillows for our injured soldiers in Iraq, cleaning up the beach, or collecting food for a local shelter or food bank. 4-H teaches the youth of today the importance of being willing and eager to serve others. 4-H has provided an excess of opportunities for me. I've been able to hold leadership positions at the county, community, and state levels. 4-H has also exposed me to state legislature, like in this instance here, and with our program, Know Your State Government, which I will be attending next weekend. 4-H also provides me the opportunity to meet other youth across the state, county, and nation. Without 4-H, I would not have any of these leadership or educational or relationship opportunities. It is crucial for 4-H to continue to receive funding because of everything that the program offers to the youth of the community. 4-H gives children something to do, goals to reach, and a positive and enjoyable environment to learn. 4-H has offered me countless opportunities over the past 9 years, and it would be awful for the youth of the future to miss out on many of the opportunities that I've been privileged to. Please fund OSU statewide at $15 million covered in Senate Bill 5515.
Thank you. Sir.
Madam Chairman, committee members, I thank you for the opportunity. My name is Gary Rodakowski. I'm a hazelnut orchardist. As a member of the Oregon Hazelnut Commission, I'm speaking on behalf of 650 hazelnut growers in Oregon, which comprises 100% of the hazelnut industry in the United States. I'm here to testify for the need for additional funding for the statewide public service agencies, the agricultural experiment stations, extension service, and forestry research laboratories. The average farm gate income for the hazelnut industry in the last 4 years has been approximately $50 million, making the average contribution to the state's economy of about $150 million annually. Growers, through the commission, have funded $2.3 million of OSU research and extension projects over the last 10 years. This teamwork has enabled the Oregon hazelnut industry to make great strides in sustainability, become a model for integrated pest management practices, and has resulted in the leading hazelnut breeding program in the world. An example of this research is in the IPM program. Over 10 years ago, they imported a little European wasp that took care of an aphid problem that we had in the orchard. And due to that IPM program, I personally have not had to apply insecticides for over 10 years. The use of pheromone traps has reduced my insecticide for that particular problem of the filbert worm by 75%. We've heard a lot about higher education for the grower. The orchardists out there, Extension Service is our higher education. It provides us with the research and the knowledge that we need to implement those projects on the ground and become better at what we do and more efficient, that both the grower and the public benefit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
thank you. And I'm going to call the next panel up, but I also just want to make sure everyone understands that it's now after 8 o'clock. We are going to run for another hour, not quite an hour, till 9 o'clock. We will not be able to hear from everyone who has signed up to testify. We will accept written testimony and make that available to all the members of the committee as well. But just make sure you understand that. I've got Peter Manti, Chris Lira, Claudia Hardwick, and Patty Katz. And in order to give the committee the opportunity to hear at least once every issue that's on the list, I'm going to use the chair's prerogative and jump a little bit ahead in the line. So on deck, I will have L.M. Reese, Patricia Phelan, Miriam Alexis Jordan, and I will take one of the representatives from Lila. You can choose among yourselves which one you want to send up. Please start.
My name is Patty Katz, and I'd like to thank you for letting me testify tonight. Last year, over 8,000 women and their children were not able to access shelters, the safety of shelters. In the last biennium, approximately 36 human beings have lost their lives in the war on domestic violence. I would like to honor the 18 humans who lost their lives in 2005. And I would like to honor the 18 human beings who lost their lives in 2006. We've lost some of our crew. And I'd like to use the rest of my time for a moment of silence to honor those human beings who have lost their lives to domestic violence. Thank you for your help so far, but the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services needs the full, we need $300 million more for basic services in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Claudia Hardwick, and I'm a clinical psychologist here in Eugene. I have spent my professional life helping people learn to change their thinking and behavior so that they'll have a happier, more productive life. However, there's one group of people in the state of Oregon that we do not help to learn to change, and that's the group of men and women that we have put in prison. The programs for rehabilitation of these people have dropped both in the number of programs and the percentage of people who can participate in the programs in the last 13 years since Measure 11 was enacted. Our money is going toward punishment rather than toward behavioral change. It makes no sense to have long mandatory sentences in place of rehabilitation. We have a limited amount of money in the state, and we have to consider how to use it to the best advantage. 95% of people who enter prison will come back into society again. Right now in prison, people learn violence, extortion, and manipulation because these are the skills that are necessary for survival in that environment. But these skills do not promote public safety once an individual is released. We want these people to return to us having learned to be responsible citizens who can hold jobs and pay taxes. We need to focus our efforts and our finances on rehabilitation rather than on punishment. We have the knowledge and ability to do this, and our state will be safer and more prosperous if we do so. The Department of Corrections budget is $1.1 billion for the biennium. This is a huge amount of money that we're spending on punishment. Please designate a substantial portion of this budget for rehabilitation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Please.
Thank you for this opportunity, co-chairs Schrader, Nolan, and respected members of the committee. My name is Peter Manti. I'm the communications officer for the Douglas ESD in Roseburg. As the communications officer for 13 Douglas County school districts, I fulfill the mission of school accountability by clarifying the concerns of our educators for the public at large, especially the 68% of Douglas County residents that have no children in public school. In line with that job function, I'm giving you a preliminary mock-up of a newspaper insert about school finances that we've prepared. In working with district personnel to produce this document, some recurring themes came to light that I'd like to share with you today. First, there is good news. Our local educators are intelligent, dedicated, and innovative. They're determined to make the best of the opportunity they have to influence the future of their community's kids. I believe you'll be impressed when you read about the techniques they've used to keep educational quality high despite a sinking bottom line, which brings me to the bad news. It now appears to be a working assumption that our public schools are no longer able to function adequately on state funding. Administrators must either take their concerns directly to their communities or make hard decisions about reducing educational offerings. Some school leaders can persuade their neighbors to pass a bond levy. Some are able to petition philanthropic organizations for special project grants. And some are even fortunate enough to find partners that donate materials and volunteer work for the school's causes. At one time, these kinds of contributions were seen as pleasant add-ons to school efforts. Now they're being used as substitutes for stable sources of funds that are renewed on a regular cycle. The truth, though, is that grants and donations are usually tied to a specific finite program. The goal is to make the job and the cash flow stop at the same time. That puts the school system back at square one after every project is completed. Ultimately, buildings and programs will suffer from the lack of financial nourishment. It would be a mistake to assume that the $6 billion being discussed today would eliminate the need for a community's financial support. But what it will do is provide an operational structure for our districts that will keep us from cutting educational programs so close to the bone. Thank you for your attention.
Well done, Mr. Manti. Thank you.
My name is Chris Lear, and I'm a director at Sexual Assault Support Services, SAS. In addition to my role as director, I work directly with survivors of sexual assault, providing legal and medical advocacy and peer counseling. I'm here to speak on behalf of SAS in support of the needed increase to the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund. SAS is one of the only community-based nonprofit sexual assault agencies statewide, serving sexual violence survivors throughout Lane County. Last year, we served 3,000 people. Let me tell you just one survivor story to illustrate just how important it is that we are able to continue this work. A SAS advocate assisted a survivor of two recent stranger rapes and past domestic and child sexual abuse. She was homeless and staying in the local shelter. She was in recovery from substance abuse and had not used substances for many months until the rapes. When she relapsed after the rape, she was denied services at the homeless shelter. The on-call advocate met with her on the weekend at the detoxification center and assessed her to be at high risk for suicide. The advocate transported the survivor to the local mental health crisis center and later to the hospital for emergency psychiatric services. The advocate provided ongoing support and follow-up to assist a survivor in entering a long-term treatment facility, which involved relocating to another city. The advocate was the only social service provider to support her throughout the entire process. The survivor was very appreciative of SAS services and told her advocate, "If you had not been there for me, I would have killed myself. You are an angel." You can see by one of the stories that these services that we provide at SAS are of vital significance to sexual violence survivors. Thank you for the increase, but it's not enough. We need additional $3 million in order to provide these comprehensive services that we offer now. On a personal note, I would like to point out how sad it is that all of us who work to save people's lives in Oregon, teachers, nurses, counselors, youth advocates, and advocates for people living with mental illness have to compete amongst ourselves for small amounts of money when we continue to fund the construction of prisons at the cost of hundreds of millions of dollars each. In Oregon, we make it easier for our children to end up in prison than to end up in college.
Good point. Thank you. Thank you. Next panel is L.M. Reese.
We can hear you.
We can hear you. Can you speak?
I can hear.
Most of our residents can only get around both personalized and mobile homes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Reese. The rest of that panel is Patricia Phelan, Miriam, Alexis Jordan, and one of the Lila representatives.
That's me.
Is that you?
Shall I begin?
Okay.
Co-chairs and members of this committee, thank you for allowing my testimony. I'm representing Lila Lane Independent Living Alliance. I'm reading testimony for Eugene, Oregon, who was unable to be here this evening, but feels very strongly about the issues at hand. I am disappointed to see that there is no sign interpreter here, and I'm disappointed to see that the room is not accessible. My name is Eugene, Oregon, and I offer testimony today as president of the Board of Directors of the Lane Independent Living Alliance, LILA. LILA is a center for independent living for persons with disabilities here in Lane County. LILA is part of a nationwide network of SILs that are devoted to fostering independence for people with disabilities. For every person with a disability who lives independently in their community, less money is expended on costly care in nursing facilities. In the most rudimentary way, we are saving the state of Oregon funding that might otherwise be expended in the long-term care system while improving the quality of life for clients and other persons with disabilities. SILs are recognized in federal law, which mandates four basic core services. The services are information and referral, independent living skills training, peer mentoring, and advocacy. LILA sponsors a number of programs that address these four components. From sign language classes to one-to-one mentoring, LILA offers quality services designed to accentuate the lives of persons with disabilities. Employment is a critical need among people with disabilities. Nearly 70% of working-age people with disabilities are unemployed. Still more are underemployed. We conduct work readiness classes helping people with disabilities to seek and secure a job. Employment affords people with disabilities expendable income as well as a heightened sense of self-worth. LILA has forged a partnership with a local one-stop employment center. We offer a cadre of persons with first-hand experience with various disabilities to help clients with disabilities to navigate the confusion of job search. Clients with disabilities have obtained their first jobs thanks to LILA's guidance and support.
Thank you.
May I have a few more moments just because we've consolidated four people into one?
You'll be denying another issue the opportunity to be heard at all, and I'm very sorry.
I have written testimony.
Thank you.
Yes.
And yes, please, let us know that you support her.
Hello, Chair Schrader, Chair Nolan, members of the committee. My name is Miriam Alexis Jordan, and I am an arts advocate, community volunteer, arts professional, and a graduate student in the Arts Administration Program at the University of Oregon. I have been in this community for 14 years now, and right from the beginning, I have contributed my time and energy in supporting our local arts organizations, putting together community events that serves the community as a whole. That includes the First Friday Art Walks that play a key role in helping revitalize the downtown area, at least on the first Friday of every month, bringing people out and about, and on the Eugene Mayer's Arts Show that honors the local artists who contribute to the arts in our organizations, as well as being on the Lane Arts Council Board and the Jacobs Gallery Board. I see firsthand the challenges facing all the arts organizations in our community. We're spending so much time now fundraising, trying to maintain whatever level of service that we can provide without having to worry about funding from the state. I support the governor's proposal as presented. I feel for organizations like the Lane Arts Council that is now have one staff member, the executive director, to
help continue with the funding of arts educations in our schools, then I support also the Oregon Cultural Trust that is working on putting together a creative vitality index to help as a tool to help determine the funding levels for our organizations. And there is a great momentum right now with the Oregon Cultural Trust, the Eugene Cultural Policy Review. The city took great pains in getting the whole community to participate in this process. And also there's the 2008 Olympic Trials and Eugene 08 coming up. And we really need the funding in order for us to should be showcased in this way.
Thank
and
you.
Could very well be the catalyst for the making Lane County a desirable annual tourist destination.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we have one more on this panel.
Did you call for Patricia Phelan?
Yes, Patricia Phelan.
Okay. Actually, she's with the SEI Union, which I am too.
Are you Laurel Jones?
I'm Laurel Jones, yes.
Excellent, fine.
Okay.
Works.
That's what I thought. Come on, sir, take one. Okay. Yes. Hello, Representative.
Oh,
Nolan
good.
And Schrader. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And all the representatives on the committee. My name is Laurel Jones, and I have been a child care provider in Eugene for the last 6 years. I work with special needs children in my home. I know that I am providing a valuable service for the families I work with, and I'm very committed to them. It is hard for parents to find people who work well with their children, and even harder to find people who will stay with them long term. It makes me feel good knowing that I am providing a valuable service to families, and the children will really like coming to my house and being here. The ERDC program has not had a significant increase for children for child care in 8 years. Some providers make as little as $1.80 per hour. Some parents have very high copays, as much as $300 per month, which is a real hardship for families who are already working low-wage jobs. Oregon has the lowest reimbursement rate to providers and the highest copays to parents in the United States. By negotiating with us, the family child care providers, the state has already recognized that the ERDC program needs changes and has agreed to a contract with child care providers starting October 1st. This will fix imbalances in the program and will greatly help ease the burden on families needing child care. It is now time for you to invest in the children of our future, honor the contract that the state has agreed to by fully funding this program. Your current budget does not allow for this. If you implement a higher corporate minimum tax, you will be able to balance the budget and also provide quality care for the most vulnerable children in our state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Next panel, Jim Torrey, Lucy Lahr, Dennis Schein, Ashley Pulliam. On deck, I have Robin Breckenridge, Carla George, Mark Harris, and Robert Trimble. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I probably don't need this mic, so I'll just keep going here. First of all, thank you for coming, Chairs Nolan and Schrader. My name is Jim Torrey. I'm here to ask you to provide full funding for Head Start at the $40 million level. No child who qualifies for Head Start should be placed on a waiting list like many in our community are today. Head Start programs reduce future crime and dropout rates. This program will reduce the education achievement gap. This is the first step in leveling the playing field for Oregon's highest-risk preschool kids, but it still leaves out roughly 50% of Oregon's preschool children whose families don't qualify or can't afford to pay for private preschool. It allows teachers in grades K through 3 to spend more time with all their students and not just those who aren't ready for school. Head Start is the best opportunity we have to reach uninsured, high-risk children and their families. Second, I urge you to reduce class sizes in at least kindergarten and first grade. This will provide the opportunity for enhanced literacy support for all children, and those children not reading at grade level from K through 3 should be tested annually. Third, increase funding for community colleges. They are the backbone of our employee training programs, which provide economic stability to all regions of Oregon. They are often the last education resource for high school dropouts and displaced workers. I urge the legislature not to give up on restructuring the corporate tax. Find a way to get together.
Thank you.
Finally, increased funding for our higher education system is imperative. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
On behalf of myself and my fellow students of the dental assisting program, thank you for giving us this chance to address this issue at LCC. I would like to start by recognizing the expense and efficiency of this program that allows us to complete it in 1 year. By keeping this program at Lane, it meets many of our needs financially, academically, and gives us the opportunity to have a marketable career in a short amount of time. Many of us don't have the time or money to apply to a four-year college. This program opens up many doors to a variety of potential students to excel in something they love and are good at. By completing this program in a year, it not only gives us the skills to enter the competitive working world, but it provides us with a stable source of income, allowing those of us with families to support them and maintain a comfortable lifestyle. This program has given me a concrete sense of community, where I'm not just another number. It also gives those of us experiencing life transitions the comfort of knowing we have each other to fall back on. This program is a reputable program that has proven itself time and time again. By providing students with the assurance of a job upon graduation and the city with skilled workers in the field of dentistry. The lack of funding to community colleges is hurting Oregon's economy. By not investing in LCC's program, we are forcing potential students to go elsewhere for programs such as this or ending their education altogether. By providing these students with the skills needed to obtain a career in dental assisting, we are making an investment in our community that promises economic growth. This program is defined by success. Each and every one of us has passed not one, but two of our Oregon State boards on our first try, and we will be equally ready for the last. If this program is taken away, many people don't have another option. By keeping this program available, it allows for any person, no matter where they find themselves in life, to obtain a career that they can be proud of.
Thank you. Thank you.
Name.
Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. Just so we have a record, your name, please.
Ashley Pulliam.
Thank you.
This mic is working. Oh, all right. Thank you.
Great.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Dennis Shine, and I am proud to say I'm from Lane County. As a number of the representatives are here, and I'm very pleased with those that I know. Like Bobby Green, I came prepared with two hats tonight, and I'm for the past 6 years, I've been on the budget committee of Lane Community College. Given the time limitations and the fact that you heard from people who are far more eloquent than me, I decided to abandon that first hat, and I turned in the written stuff over here. The second hat is that I'm a member of an advocacy, I've been working on that word, advocacy committee for senior and disabled services for Lane County. And you've already heard the word Oregon Independence Project, and you're going to hear it again. Now, I'm a retired economist, and so you'll pardon me if I get into the jargon. But one of the ways that our budget committee at Lane looks at things is cost-benefit analysis. How much is it going to cost, and what's the return on it? And my contention is that if you get a good economist, and there are some at this institution like Ed Whitelaw, who's experienced in doing that sort of thing, that if you do a nice cost-benefit study, you will find that the Oregon Independence Project is one of the things that you should invest in, because the return is extremely high on that. And there's a person you can contact in Salem who knows more about this than I do. Or you can talk to some of my colleagues in the back sitting in the wheelchairs. I thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about that. The woman in Salem you need to talk to is Nicole Pommentier at 329
3375.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Was Lucy Lahr? Okay, great. Thank you.
Can you just hold this up, Dennis?
Oh, yeah.
It's a handheld mic.
Thank you. Good evening, chairpersons and committee members, and thank you for coming to Lane County. My name is Lucy Lahr, and for the last 20 years, I've worked as a social worker for the Department of Human Services for the state of Oregon. I also am a Lane Workforce Partnership board member and previously sat on the executive board of the Lane County Labor Council. I sit before you this evening to encourage you to, as members of our legislature, to restore the budget for the University of Oregon's Labor Education and Research Center, as well as to approve the governor's higher education budget proposal. I have attended many LIRC trainings over the years and have appreciated very much their high-quality leadership development and skill-building focus. LIRC provides continuing education for working people, many of whom would not otherwise have access to these kinds of opportunities for further education. LIRC provides training in labor management collaboration, effective communication, conflict resolution, and problem-solving skills. All of these skills are valued by employers and needed by employers. They skill up our existing workforce, and they create opportunities for advancement and career development for workers. No one else in Oregon is doing this kind of work, and LIRC is meeting a critical need for workers and employers. LIRC provides education and training regionally throughout the state. LIRC adds value to our state by increasing the quality of the workforce and the quality of jobs in our local communities. I have worked with LIRC researchers on workforce and economic development issues, and they have increased citizen education and involvement in workforce and economic development issues in the Lane County area. Please fully fund LIRC and the higher education budget so that today's workers and tomorrow's workers can continue to get education and training necessary for their jobs. We have heard from many well-spoken and hardworking advocates from many deserving programs this evening. If funding them all means that we need to raise additional revenues, I strongly suggest that we get started on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Next panel is Robin Breckenridge, Carla George, Mark Harris, and Robert Trimble. On deck, Catherine Wilson, Deborah DePew, Chris O'Neill, and Pedro DePeroy. Please.
Good evening.
Where's the mic?
He has it.
Okay, let's go.
Good evening, Senator Schroeder, Representative Nolan, and committee members. My name is Robin Breckenridge, and I'm representing Oregon Recovery Homes. I'm here tonight in front of you to request that you put the funding back.
Talk louder, please.
Okay, talk louder. To put the money back into the governor's budget that was placed there for the additional outreach workers. My story is a little different. I started with the Oregon Recovery Homes program in 2002. In 2000, we got the first outreach worker, and there was just one. In 2002, we had 83 homes in the state of Oregon. Today, we have 149. There's 1,200 members living in the homes with over 300 children. There are two current outreach workers. In the last 2 weeks, I have worked over 140 hours. There's a lot of technical assistance that goes on with these homes in the opening, the operations, and the recovery process. It's a lot of work for two people. We need additional funding put back into the budget. I'm sitting here in front of you today with 7 years, 5 months, and 26 days clean.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I started this recovery process after getting out of federal prison and didn't return back to a criminal lifestyle. This program works. It's an investment the state cannot afford to make. Over a 10-year period, it costs the state $1.40 a day to fund this program. I thank you for your time, and I hope that you can put the funding back into our budget.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, Co-Chairs Nolan and Schroeder and members of the committee. My name is Carla George, and I'm the program manager at the Relief Nursery here in Eugene. And I come to you today for a couple of reasons to ask that you would adopt the governor's recommended budget in regards to the relief nurseries and alcohol and drug treatment. There's over 1,000 children in Oregon who are waiting to receive services that the relief nurseries have to offer that are at risk of abuse and neglect. And in order for us to serve those children, we need to adopt the governor's recommended budget. And along with that, we do a lot of collaboration efforts between the relief nurseries and alcohol and drug treatments to work with the parents. And in order to do that, we need to have funding for treatment. Otherwise, we're working with the parents and they're not receiving the services that they need to get. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. My name is Mark Harris. I'm quite a simple country drug counselor. I'm a Council of the Wise, so when I hear that a corporation pays less taxes than I do as an individual, when I hear resistance to raising beer and wine tax and dedicating those monies to substance abuse prevention and treatment, I am at a loss. I've been a faculty member at Lane Community College for 15 years and a practicing addictions counselor for 36 years, 24 of them in this state. So I've been engaged in my classes and training addictions professionals, a number of them in this room, and students in recovery from addictions, also a number of them in this room. People who've also recovered from what we describe in my trade as train wreck lives. And we are engaged in putting them back on track. So that includes people who have traumatic experience, including domestic violence and both Gulf Wars. I'm currently actually treating a Gulf War veteran from PTSD who's a student here. Part of the community college mission is not basket weaving 101, but in my case, HS 199, Introduction to Addictive Behavior, which is a class for what I characterize as civilians, people who have been otherwise victimized by addictions, and HS 200, Understanding Addictive Behavior, a class to train nurses, EMTs, counselors, teachers, DHS workers, and other human service prevention professionals in current addiction science. The last budget cuts destroyed the program that trains drug counselors for this state. So I'm not the only one doing the work that I'm doing at Lane Community College, but I'm definitely feeling like the Lone Ranger in more ways than one. I would suggest that anything less than $529 million for community college means that the cost for the remaining classes were so out of reach. And I suggest that you fund it at that level.
Thank you. Thanks.
Chair Nolan, Chair Schrader, members of the committee, my name is Bob Campbell. I'm from Eugene. I'm here representing the 350 members of the National Alliance of Mental Illness of Lane County, where I serve as a volunteer on the board of directors and a teacher for the family-to-family course. The best job that I've held in my life was a legislative assistant to Senator Grattan Cairns for 3 sessions. And one thing that he pounded on me, one of the few things he pounded on me, is it's the first responsibility of the legislature is to take care of the people that can't take care of themselves, the elderly, the young, and the ill. I would love to fill this room with the mentally ill. Half the room would look just as it looks right now. The other half of the room would make each one of us extremely nervous because they would smell, they would look bad, you would smell urine, and you'd feel fear. My son is mentally ill, is bipolar, was removed from the Army because of a personality disorder. My son entered the program for the Oregon State Department of Human Resources, Voc Rehab, where he was kicked out because he was of mental issues. He was told to come back when he was mentally stable. This was in the last year. 3.5 years ago, he applied for SSDI. He's still out of approved. 4 months ago, he stood in front of a judge and pleaded his case, and we're still waiting to hear the results of that case. The mentally ill and their families in the state of Oregon are not adequately funded. I don't think you can adequately fund them. But we need more. I want to thank you, each one of you, for the job you're doing. You have a thankless job that's extremely difficult. And I appreciate what you've been standing in the sidelines watching you. And I want to thank you for letting me tell my story, and I want you to know that there are hundreds and hundreds of families that have a story just like mine, and they can't get help. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Catherine Wilson, Deborah DePew, Chris O'Neill, Pedro DePeroy. And then I will call our final panel on deck, Rebecca Erhausen, Lynn Schroeder, Megan Temple, and Jane Sawall. Please, let's start.
Hello, my name is Catherine Wilson, and I want to thank the co-chairs and the committee for being here in Eugene, Oregon tonight. I'm a sixth-generation Lane County girl, and I'm in the film business. And I've spent my whole life, 35 years, supporting the film industry in the state of Oregon because my grandfather, who still has a farm out on River Road from 1870, told me to. And why I support this industry in Oregon is it's one of the very few non-polluting, highly labor-intensive industries where millions of dollars are brought into Oregon. They are dropped here, and then they leave again. We don't have to support any infrastructure. We don't have to build any schools. We don't have to build any highways. It's a wonderful artistic endeavor and employs thousands of people in Lane County. I was your casting director on Animal House. I got Animal House here to Eugene. I was a casting director and location scout for Stand By Me. And I'm going to tell you that the film companies, when they come here, literally go through the Yellow Pages and use every single business that's in the Yellow Pages in every community that they film in. I understand that the marketing budget has been dropped or slashed for the film office. And what's important about that is in Hollywood, for instance, the $2.5 million they spent on Animal House, they spent another $2.5 million marketing it. In the film business, it's really, really important for marketing money. And when David Wilson was the film commissioner and had a great budget for marketing, we essentially tripled the amount of millions of dollars coming into Oregon's economy. I want to thank you so much for being here, and please give us back our marketing budget so we can still bring in this wonderful industry that employs unemployed people, and thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Deborah DePew. Please excuse my voice. I've been at work all day. Thank you, Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan and committee members for giving me a chance to speak. I am a parent and family member. I am currently employed by Oregon Family Support Network. And what we do is we work with families that have children with mental health issues, with mental health behavioral and disorders. And what we do is we have support groups that give the parents a chance to get a little bit of respite so that they can make it through that next day. I would really encourage you to look at the $116 million for mental health services because as many people here were today encouraging you to fund education, one of the statistics that I heard as soon as my children were diagnosed with ADHD is that your children will probably either be a dropout or be in the correction system. Not a very great picture. I have four sons. Fortunately, so far, three of them have graduated from high school. I am holding my breath for the fourth one, which, with any luck, may graduate in June if he gets over his case of senioritis. He is having a hard time going to class because he's been troubled with depression lately. And I encourage you to realize that children with mental health disorders are usually diagnosed between the ages of 14 and 24. And if they are not treated after they're diagnosed, they have a 50% dropout rate of high school. So they don't even get to try to go to college because they don't make it out of high school. And I would just like to encourage you to remember the children with mental health disorders when you look at your budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. There And are you going to join the panel?
Good evening and thank you. My name is Pedro M. DeProy. I am a program manager at Independent Environments Incorporated in Eugene, Oregon. Earlier, Langston Hughes was quoted, dreams deferred. Well, I am here to speak for small voices of individuals whose dreams haven't been deferred, but they've truly been denied. And those are people with developmental disabilities. Earlier today, I was at your house at a rally with and for persons with developmental disabilities on your steps. I got to speak with some of your colleagues. Represented there throughout the state were persons with developmental disabilities, the youngest being 4 years old, a little girl in a wheelchair named Jade, who brought tears to my eyes, going all the way up to people over 70. Now, these are not persons who are asking for more. They're not asking for special. They're not asking for better. What they're asking for is that they not be underfunded or have their funding cut so that their dreams can't be realized. And that is a quality of life issue. We can't put a course analysis to it. These are members of our communities. They're our sons, our daughters, our sisters, our brothers, aunts, uncles, right, who want to be full participants. And that requires that services be funded fully at a $60 million rate so that they can receive those services. They can have that quality of life. And in fact, their dreams will be realized, not deferred and not denied. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Gisela Garcia, and I'm a registered nurse. I work as a surgical nurse at a cardiac operating room. I urge you to go forward with the tobacco and corporate tax. I want you also to be aware that it's still raining for a lot of Oregonians, and I really urge you to fund the Oregon Health Care Plan. It is so vital. And I'm going to tell you two examples of what I see where I work and the decisions that are being made that I don't think should be happening. One of the operations that we perform is heart valve replacement. There are two types, mechanical and tissue. Both of them are for certain types of disease. And decisions are being made not on what's best for the patient, but what the patient can afford and what would be able to follow through. Patients are ending up with tissue valves, which shortens the life of the valve 10 to 15 years because we are not sure that they will have the money to buy the Coumadin that is required to keep this valve alive. That is not a good decision. I also see that oral care, dental care, is seen as a luxury for Oregonians. That is also not good. It's causing damage to their heart valves, and that is not good. We think we're saving money. We're not. They're coming back with broken valves, with damaged valves. We need to fund this program. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Our last panel for the evening, and I wish we could hear from all of you. Rebecca Erhausen, Lynn Schroeder, Megan Kempel, and Jane Sowall. It might be best if we cluster at this table because that's where the microphone is. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Rebecca Erhausen. I am a member of the Elegante Speak Hispanic Organization of Lake County and President and Chair of Fiesta Latina. I'm also a member of the Eugene Symphony. I am here to ask you to support the Oregon Arts Commission Creative Oregon Initiative, the arts film community in Oregon. Grants made by the Arts Commission and Cultural Trust are vital to our community.
You might hold it just a
minute. We're probably
there
the only
go.
Hispanic non-profit organization in Lane County that promotes our cultural heritage through the arts. Fiesta Latina is a project of Adelante City. Some years ago, the first grant we received from the Oregon Arts Commission saved our event. This year, we will celebrate our 16th annual Fiesta Latina. We have a committee of volunteers, nobody paid in our organization. With very little money, we can accomplish a whole lot. Our event brings from 10 to 15,000 people every year. Our focus is our children. And through the arts, every year we bring an artisan from the state of Guanajuato, Mexico, to do workshops in different schools in our local schools. 3 years ago, we were honored with the visit of the president of UNESCO in Castilla-La Mancha, Spain, to celebrate our 400th anniversary of Don Quixote de la Mancha. We also had one of Mexico's best muralists, Capello, who, with students of high schools from Springfield, Oakfield, and Fourier, created a mural outside the Emerald Art Center in Springfield. Please help us to continue bringing our community together through the arts. The arts build community in Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs Schrader, Nolan, and committee members. My name is Lynn Schroeder, and I'm the Assistant Director for Lane County Department of Youth Services, the juvenile department here in Lane County. And I'm speaking to you tonight in support of the governor's recommended budget for diversion and juvenile crime prevention services that go to counties. In the past 12 years, the Lane County Department of Youth Services has experienced cuts every single year. The secure beds for Lane County in the state system has decreased from 75 to 32 in the last 4 years. Our local treatment beds for juveniles in Lane County, due to budget cuts, have decreased from 28 to 8, and that's only for boys. We have no beds for girls. If the secure rural schools funding is not renewed, those 8 beds will go. That leaves us with 0 treatment services in Lane County. And we currently have 32 detention beds. Those are at risk if we have further cuts. So you see, any funding that we get from the state is critical and supports us to keep diverting youth from going deeper into the system. At the same time we're experiencing all these cuts, we have a deep commitment to providing evidence-based services in our county. In fact, we've gone and brought in training for all of our staff so that they can provide those effective services, not just to meet the state mandate, but it's our own mandate. Whatever we do with our funding that we get, we want it to be effective and we want it to have results. But we're at a point where if we have any further reductions, we're not going to have services to measure whether they're effective. So we all know that effective services with juveniles keeps people out of the adult system. I urge you to support the governor's budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I may be missing the last speaker.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee, thank you very much for hosting these hearings and thank you for taking our comments. My name is Megan Kemple. I'm the Farm to Cafeteria Program Coordinator with the Willamette Farm and Food Coalition. 3 bills have recently been introduced into the Oregon State Legislature. If these bills pass, they will bring fresh, healthy, locally grown food into Oregon school lunchrooms. This package of bills, House Bills 3476, 3307, and 3185, allocate 7 cents per school meal served, which include Oregon-grown produce, create a farm-to-school program within the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and awards mini-grants for school gardens and other agriculture and food-based learning. Yesterday, the House Education Subcommittee on Education Innovation unanimously voted for the 3 bills to be heard and worked in the full House Education Committee today. There's a long list of organizational and business endorsers for this package of bills, including 18 farms in Lane County. Our local school districts are interested in purchasing produce grown in Oregon and have identified cost as one of the largest barriers. Reimbursing school districts for every meal served, which includes Oregon-grown produce, will help make this possible. Oregon is currently one of the only states in the U.S. that does not allocate any state funding for the National School Lunch Program. In a way, we are just catching up with these bills, but we are doing so by keeping Oregon money in Oregon. These bills will allow us to support Oregon agriculture while at the same time educating students about how their food is grown. We ask that you give this package of bills a hearing and that you allocate funding for them. Others who did not have the opportunity to speak this evening include a parent concerned about the quality of food her child is offered, a principal concerned about the students of poverty in need of nutritional meals, and school garden project staff who sees firsthand the positive impacts school gardens and fresh food have on our children. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much for helping us understand your priorities and showing the passion that you have for the services that the state and the local communities give you. I appreciate